Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Ronald A. Edwards, and this is the Don and Ron Show, coming to you from Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the top of the world, if you will, the frigid top of the world. Wind chill here in the Twin Cities, about 18 below zero, according to our monitors, if you will. The wind is fierce, gusting as much now as 47 to 50 miles an hour right here in the Twin Cities. You can hear it whistling and et cetera. This has been one heck of a winter for those who are part of our international and national listening audience. You had to live here for a period of time to have a real appreciation of the kind of winter that the winter of 2013 has been. I have to tell you, it is really something else. You kind of wonder, wow, you know, what's gonna happen here? By the way, some portions of the infrastructure, if you will, was talking with a fellow journalist about an hour ago, and we were saying that there are problems with some of the infrastructure, if you will. Machinery breaking down, problems with, of course, transportation and et cetera. You can see that this weather pattern is really beginning to wear on Minnesotans, if you will. In fact, this has been a weather pattern which has really impacted basically every part of this country, including into the northern parts of Florida, if you will. Kind of makes you think that the scientists were wrong in their analysis about global warming. I don't know. It sounds like and feels like we're talking about global cooling, if you will, deep freeze. Very dangerous in many respects. Very peculiar patterns. In fact, I have a question as we move on to other news features taking place around the world. I've noticed that I have not seen a definitive declaration with regards to the actual temperature of the sun. You know, I wonder how much it's increased or decreased over the last 50 years, if you know what I'm saying. I always hear discussions about sunspots and eruptions on the sun and such things as that, which can create problems as far away as here, you know, on good old Earth. But I'm just kind of wondering if the sun is generating the same level of intense heat that it was, let's say, 50 years ago. Sometimes the decrease, if you will, represents that something is happening, quote-unquote, with that body of energy, the sun, that keeps us alive, if you know what I mean. Phone number, by the way, what we'll do is open up our private line, 763-228-1748. Again, I'm Ron Edwards. My associate and co-host, Mr. Allen, will not be with us this evening. Want to take a close look at the situation in Europe, if you will. In the last couple of hours, the Russian Federated Republic has announced a training exercise of its military forces along its western border with the Ukraine, if you will. We've all certainly been following that situation. Some have been following it over the last 3 months as demonstrators and et cetera have demanded any number of concessions and reforms, if you will, pertaining to the nation state of the Ukraine. Of course, at least 45% of the population of the Ukraine are Russian-speaking. In fact, the eastern part of the Ukraine is extremely pro-Russian, if you will, and consequently, Mr. Putin, who is not bashful about provoking the United States, has indicated that the interest of the Russian-speaking Ukrainians must be preserved and protected, as well as Russia's very large naval base there in the Crimea, in southern the southern Ukraine, if you will. Very, very large Soviet naval base, what we refer to as a warm water port. This has always been a very ambitious desire of the Russians since the days of the Tsar, if you will, to have access to warm weather ports, in other words, ports that are not clogged up 6-7 months out of the year with ice and other quote-unquote impediments, if you will. And so the Russians are very possessive, if you will, about being able to have unrestricted entrance to, quote-unquote, particularly the Mediterranean, if you will. It is a little bit more difficult in the Pacific, and for a long time the Russians, of course, had certain ambitions, particularly after the end of the Second World War, of maybe taking possession even further than they did of Japanese possessions and opening up the opportunity for significant Russian naval presence. And so with 150,000, think about that, 150,000 Russian troops on the move, as we speak here from studios here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, prognosticators were saying just 2 days ago that President Putin would not make that kind of political or military move on our television program to be aired here Sunday in the Twin Cities. We took umbrage and exception with that, maintaining that one did not understand the mindset and the culture of the Russians and their, quote-unquote, placing of extreme importance on protecting their borders, their national sovereignty, and et cetera. And as President Putin has said in the past, that the Ukraine are really of the Russian people, if you will, that there has been certainly a long history, and it was only by, quote-unquote, a act of benevolence by the Russians 23 years ago that the Ukraine was allowed to assume, quote-unquote, the national portfolio of independence, if you will, as an independent nation. We all know it's certainly been talked about, played out, and et cetera, over the last number of months, in fact, over the last couple of years, ever since the Orange Revolution of a couple of years ago, that the Russians feel threatened in some regards by the courting by the European Union of the Ukraine. In fact, that was one of the driving factors that caused President Putin and the Russian Federation to make available a $15 billion loan to the Ukrainians. The Ukrainian economy is in pretty bad shape. The Russians could have made it even worse with regards to the sale of petrol or oil, if you will, to the Ukraine to keep its industries, if you will, its plants, its military, its own military rolling. The Russians maintain that they have been more than generous and, quote-unquote, helping to preserve the economic stability of the Ukraine, and so consequently have taken grave exception and umbrage, if we will, to the kinds of promises being made by the European Union. And President Putin has accused the United States of meddling in the internal affairs of the Ukraine, leading to the ouster of the Ukrainian president, who it was announced late this afternoon that an international warrant for his arrest. It is said that he is at the Russian naval base in the Crimea. I doubt that anyone has the capabilities to go into that base and, quote-unquote, bring the former president out, if you will. But now, again, we repeat that number, over 150,000 crack Russian troops on the move. Russians notorious, legendary for these kinds of actions. Some call it provocation, if you will, so be it. Moving large numbers of troops, Soviet armor, Soviet air, and helicopter forces, and et cetera, on the move. In a situation like this, for the purposes of tonight's program, given the kind of economic hardship that has begun to confront this country, the United States of America, after fighting basically two wars for over 12 years, when you talk in terms of Iraq and Afghanistan, just 2 days ago, Secretary of Defense Hagel indicated there would be a significant cutback in American military might, if you will, 80,000 or more men and women being mustered out of the United States Army. A couple of select programs, the A-10, attack aircraft, we used to call them tank killers, if you will, would be put into mothballs, if you will. There would be other cuts. And the United States would return to a level not seen since the beginning of the Second World War, just prior to the attack by the Japanese on Pearl Harbor. In fact, back in those days, the United States was accused of isolation, if you will. And so one wonders how much thinking, pure thinking, good, clear, concise thinking has gone into such a severe reduction of America's military presence when, in fact, the United States has her hands in so many different situations. Just yesterday, if you will, it was revealed that the United States Special Forces have been operating in Nigeria, helping the Nigerian Armed Forces deal with some problems on Nigeria's north, northeast, northwestern, and western borders, if you will. We had said on these programs and our television programs over the last year and a half that Americans needed to take note of the creation by President Barack Obama of the U.S. African Command under General Carter Ham, headquartered, interesting enough, in Germany, which is kind of interesting. But as we have been reporting from this corner, that the United States has more of a military presence and been involved in significant military operations against black Africans than the American public is being told. And in fact, on our television program to air here this coming Sunday, we talk in terms of how the United States has been covering itself with regards to casualties that have taken place during firefights in the Central African Republic, in Uganda, if you will, in Burundi, and also an American military clandestine presence in the Eastern Congo, as it is referred to, really known as Zaire. And so yesterday, when it slipped out after a horrifying attack on a school in northwestern Nigeria, in which the number seems to be 27, 28, 29 young Nigerian students were butchered, if you will, by a Islamic, well, identified as a partial Islamic sect, if you will, military, paramilitary group, that these revelations emerge, if you will, of American special forces in Nigeria. Now, when you look at the map of Central Africa, if you will, Black Africa, a land extremely rich in natural resources and et cetera, much of what America's industry would like to get their hands on, if you will, everything ranging from gold, diamonds, if you will, to copper, to other zinc, to other precious, very, very precious metals, if you will, as well as the United States feeling a need to counter the very aggressive, quote-unquote, presence of China in Black Africa, if you will, though some Black Africans indicate that they are not necessarily happy with the manner in which Chinese are dealing with Black Africans in their own countries, the Ivory Coast, Cameroon, Ghana, places like that. But the Chinese are bringing their expertise of development, marketing, if you will, and et cetera, are bringing Chinese products into that part of the world, and the United States feels that they are required for whatever reason to deal with that particular situation, the presence of the little yellow man in Black Africa. The only problem is that Europe and by default, the United States had an opportunity to do the right thing for a couple of hundred years in Black Africa. The Spanish, the Portuguese, if you will, particularly Britain and France and Belgium, if you will, the Netherlands, if you will, even a Germany under the stewardship and the leadership of the Kaiser, if you will, leading up to the First World War, and all that Europe, and white America did was to inflict pain and drain the tremendous resources that exist within Black Africa. In fact, all of Africa, from the Mediterranean to, quote-unquote, the Indian Ocean, if you will. When you look at countries like Portugal and the Netherlands and Belgium and the enormous wealth that they plundered, first from South America, then Black Africa, and in the case of the Dutch and the French, from the Far East, from Indonesia, from what was formerly called, quote-unquote, Indochina, if you will, Malaysia, the British, if you will, and et cetera. And my God, the wealth that the Brits were able to take out over a period of over 200 years out of India, if you will, the tremendous resources that were plundered from that country, which allowed European, quote-unquote, Christian, white Christian nations to enjoy a level of prosperity far, far, far in excess of their size, if you will. I mean, go take your map. For those of you who've got your computers, just call up the Atlas, if you will, with your little mouse there, and just take a look at those European countries and take a look at some of the countries that we have named. I mean, just take a look at the vast riches that were plundered by the Portuguese. Take a look at the size of Portugal and the size of Brazil and think in terms of over almost 300 years of Portuguese presence, which brought all kinds of riches, if you will, prosperity to the little nation of Portugal. Same with Spain, a much larger nation as it pertains to Portugal, a nation about the same size as France, but a nation about 2.5 times larger than England, Mother England, if you will. And realize the discussion that is now going on, again, within white Christendom, about the fact that there needs to be some cultivation of the quote-unquote unprepared and unsuccessful Black Africans, if you will, who have been given a chance, you know, and an opportunity, and haven't done anything with it, and it's time to recolonialize, if you will. It's time to move back in. And, of course, militarily, who is best prepared and able to move militarily than, the United States of America? And so, consequently, the creation of the U.S. African Command under General Carter Ham. The test run last year in Mali, if you will, where, and of course all we have to do nowadays is maintain that wherever there is incursions and uprisings and Arab Springs and et cetera, that it is Al-Qaeda, if you will, it is Al-Shabaab, if you will. And it is like the utilization of, quote-unquote, the black witch, if you will. And so that propaganda makes it more easier to sell to the masses of your nation, in this case the United States, France, if you will, Britain to some degree. Others are being encouraged. And so the United States was really caught off guard over the last couple of years as China looking, quote-unquote, to the West, if you will, looking at Mother Africa, decided that it was time to play the game that was played even on China during the days of Marco Polo, all the way up to the Boxer rebellions and uprisings. And, you know, for those of you that watch movies, 55 Days at Peking, I mean, you know, that was an adaptation that talked in terms of the exploitation of the Chinese people. It's one of the reasons that Japan society was closed all the way up until 1855 before the Japanese would let, quote-unquote, white Christians set foot on the soil of the imperial Japanese islands. All of these things are in play tonight as we watch a massive struggle taking place, not only, of course, in the whole thing in Black Africa, the courting of Nigeria for its very precious commodity, oil, if you will, but the other riches that we talked about earlier that exist and are in play, the kind of thing that makes multinational European white corporations. Now, the same thinking and the accepting of the doctrines doesn't come into play when the Chinese and the Japanese and now Brazil, by the way, starting to move with her large corporations and et cetera, if you will. And by the way, just on a side note, it is no accident what is happening in Venezuela, if you will. Undermining of the current government there. You know the United States and the CIA and the National Defense Agency and others are playing a significant role. If they can create turmoil in Venezuela, the opportunity to take control of Venezuelan oil, if you will, quote-unquote, means more profit for, quote-unquote, America's big corporate, if you will. In fact, it kind of spells itself out with regards to the battle going on now in this part of the country, the Keystone Pipeline, XL, and et cetera, and the need to take Canadian crude and North Dakota sweet, as it is called, and ship it all the way to New Orleans and put it on big tankers, if you will, and continue to sell Canadian and American, TransCanada, as the company is called, should be just called TransCanadian American and just get it over with. But then that brings into play what is happening, in which we started on this international piece, what is going on in Ukraine, where Russia is doing a tremendous amount of things with, quote-unquote, her oil revenue, if you will. In fact, even as we speak, though, there is propaganda that emerges that the United States has surpassed, quote-unquote, Russia and all the actual production of oil, because Russia is really, according to the National Petroleum Association and et cetera, that the Russians are producing more oil than any nation, including the Saudis, our good friends, the Saudis, the very good friends of Congressman Keith Ellison here in our own beloved 5th Congressional District here in the city of all of the city of Minneapolis and some of the surrounding areas. Congressman Ellison takes great pride in his quote-unquote relationships with the Saudis, and of course they have wined and dined him. In fact, I kind of wish sometimes that the good congressman would spend as much time in North Minneapolis as he does, quote-unquote, traveling around to the Middle East to be entertained by his Saudi friends and et cetera. But the Saudis have the money, and consequently they have the influence, and they control certain members of the American Congress, if you will, able to dictate what issues that should be addressed, if you will, which are part of the best interest of Saudi Arabia. And, of course, the Saudis have taken note of the significantly emerging Russian petroleum interest and et cetera. And then you have Iran. Let's not forget the situation with Iran. And as a fact, the Iranians, of course, are watching closely the Russian military movement this evening as we speak again, repeating, for those of you who may have just joined us, the United States Defense Department announcing that it has been confirmed that over 150,000 cracked Russian Federation troops have, under the guise of war games, if you will, have moved significant forces towards the Ukrainian eastern border, Russia's western border, if you will. President Putin indicating that he is concerned, quote-unquote, with regards to Russia's interests, Russia's security, if you will. People don't seem to understand that the Russians have said to the United States in the last couple of days that they, the Russians, consider their naval base in the Black Sea as having the same obligation of protection from the Russians as the United States expresses about Guantanamo, which is on sovereign Cuban soil and has been there for about 100 years, if you will. No matter what the Cubans say about the American presence at Guantanamo, at that naval base on sovereign Cuban territory, the position of the United States is to, quote-unquote, rattle its military saber and say this is a non-discussion. In fact, this is our mentality here in the United States with respect to the Panama Canal. I mean, we have never, as a nation, paid and compensated the Panamanian people for the enormous profit that has been gained over the last 80 years, 70 years, as it pertains to the Panama Canal. So tonight, in another part of the world, there in the Crimea and there in the Ukraine, the Russians are saying that this is part of our sphere of influence, if you will, that we are concerned about those things that are important to the security and to the sovereignty of Mother Russia, if you will. And so it'll be interesting to see how President Obama and the European Union and NATO handle this situation. God help us, by the way, in a situation like this tonight, if in fact there is a miscalculation of any kind, if you will, which could lead to a response, if you will, and ultimately the pushing of the wrong button. That's why that red phone is so important. That's why it's always important for world leaders to confer, to talk, to quote-unquote be very measured, if you will, in their reflections and their strategies, if you will. So tonight we are looking at, and by the way, I would advise many of you who are listening, particularly our international audience, which you are more inclined to do than our local domestic audiences, turn those shortwave radios on, if you will. Listen to some of the Russian-English broadcast coming out of Moscow, coming out of St. Petersburg, coming out of Volgograd. Listen closely to what the Russian commentators have been told to say as President Putin is, quote-unquote, flexing his muscles. I mean, this is a man who's feeling good about Russia, if you will, a successful Olympics, if you will, in which, of course, they bested the United States. They got and received more medals, if you will. But more importantly, the Russians maintained the security integrity of the games at a time when Western propagandists were putting out information that these games were to be interrupted and disrupted by terrorists and et cetera. We well remember a press conference that we saw via television in which President Putin indicated that the iron fist of Russian security was in place and that there would be no disruption, there would be no security threat, there would be no incident, if you will, and people were safe to come to that part of the world, to Sochi, if you will, and to enjoy the festivities. And think about it, the games of peace. No sooner than the games of peace are over, President Putin, annoyed by what he sees happening on his western border with a nation that has was for centuries a part of Mother Russia, that he has decided to indicate that that the doctrine, if you will, of peace in our time, that was Neville Chamberlain, the former Prime Minister of Britain back in 1937. Poor Neville Chamberlain talked about peace in our time. It is quite clear President Putin intends to exercise the full power that he has at his command to protect, quote-unquote, that which was and is still considered, particularly the eastern part of the Ukraine, is considered to be a part of Mother Russia. I would not be surprised in the next number of months if we do not see a division, a splitting of the Ukraine, and look at a situation of what used to be the old Germany, East Germany, West Germany. We'll be looking at Western Ukraine, Eastern Ukraine, with, of course, the Eastern Ukraine being under the control and auspices and protection of the Russian Federated Republic, if you will. Keep your eye on this situation. Diplomacy, if you will, not since the days of John Foster Dulles and his smooth, slick brother, Allen, head of the CIA, has there possibly been this kind of demand. Susan Rice, John Kerry, Secretary of State, Susan Rice, special security advisor, if you will, to the president, will have to be on their toes with this one. They are dealing with a man who is the master of chess, that is President Putin, in a very volatile situation in a nation, the Ukraine, deeply divided along ethnic and religious lines. It's interesting how the issue of race, of religion has come into place in that particular country, and ethnicity also with regards to those non-Russian speaking Ukrainians who I'm not quite sure recognized quickly enough the possibility of a Russian military response to what is happening in Kyiv and throughout the rest of the Ukraine, if you will. Watch that very, very closely. Well, here in our own Twin Cities, again, I'm Ari Edwards, co-host with Mr. Donald Allen, my co-host and associate, Mr. Allen, not with us this evening here in the Twin Cities. And so we are walking through tonight's program, taking a look at a multiplicity of issues that are taking place locally now. Big day for some. The quote-unquote kind of African-American lobby day at our state capitol, if you will, our beautifully and newly restorated state capitol. Beautiful. The kind of work that was done by Dunn Construction of Kansas City, Missouri, who came here, it took them about 3 years, and just did a whole restoration of the beloved state capitol for the state of Minnesota. Restored a lot of things, if you will. Also worked on the connecting tunnels under the ground that lead from some of the state office buildings to the state capitol itself, and et cetera. The only problem was that we couldn't find any African Americans to work in the restoration of the state capitol. And so it was ironic to once again, for the third consecutive year, to hear about African Americans at the state capitol talking about their dreams and ambitions and not understanding that the first 2 years that they were doing that, white workers were on the scaffolds, if you will, looking down and laughing at, quote-unquote, the questions and the challenges that were being raised by African-American leaders about employment and opportunity and et cetera, knowing that in the very building and on the very steps outside of the doors of the Capitol that these pronunciations and et cetera were being made, that, quote-unquote, discrimination and denial of access was fully engaged, if you will. State Human Rights Commissioner Kevin Lindsay here in our state of Minnesota attempted to address the problem over a three-year period, was not able to do it, was not successful by any stretch of the imagination. That is sad because it raises serious questions about the continued demise politically of the African-American community here in the state of Minnesota, and particularly here in the Twin Cities, which is the major population hub, if you will. As we have been first to report after the elections in November of 2013, and for the first time in 33 years in Minneapolis, 27 years in St. Paul, that no African-American sits on the city council of either one of those two cities' governing body, if you will. In fact, we reside in a city in which just 15 years ago, we were blessed with a black mayor, first female, first African-American to be elected mayor of our beloved Shangri-La, if you will, and two black city councilmen at one point, if you will. And now we have none of the above. St. Paul at one time, certainly for, as we said, 27 years, first being William Wilson, elected from the first ward in St. Paul, becoming the city councilman, if you will, that there is no presence whatsoever. And with some of the turmoil that we are now seeing inside of the Minneapolis City Hall, St. Paul seems to be much more reserved at this particular point. The city of St. Paul, by the way, has 7 city council members. We have 13 here in the city of Minneapolis. Absolute chaos. In fact, there has actually been physical confrontations between employees of the city council who work for different council members, if you will, blows being struck during political caucuses, if you will, real chaos amongst the Somali community. We have the largest Somali population in the United States, if you will. And, of course, there has been controversy coming out of that existence. The FBI has been monitoring very closely for the last 7 or 8 years the existence of the pipeline, as they refer to it, of young Somalis who are recruited and then sent overseas to fight and die as a part of the conflict in Somalia and now in portions of Kenya. And as an outgrowth of that, a number of very powerful players on the international scene have come into play and are watching very closely what happens here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, particularly Minneapolis and St. Paul. In fact, there are some serious questions that have been raised with respect to the friction that is existing amongst the Somali clans, as they identify themselves, that led to a very mysterious explosion, if you will, in a business facility and apartment complex, about 14 apartments, and then some stores and et cetera, and then actually 2 mosques in actual proximity, one to the other. And on January 1 of this year, at about, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, a call was made that there were problems on the third floor, and police were just arriving when the building exploded, if you will, just blew up. Fire broke out. There were at least 3 deaths, all 3 males, one of whom had, according to, again, the newspapers and Homeland Security, had just returned from Somalia, if you will, and 2 others who were associates and et cetera. Now, this in itself was enough of a concern to the Somali community. But then when the caucuses took place for an election in the legislative district in which a significant portion of the Somali community is located, coming on the heels of the, as the Mogadishu Times has pointed out, the election of the first Somalian to a political office in the United States. And yet that honeymoon seems to be over more quickly than it took the bride and groom, quote unquote, to get into the car and take off for a honeymoon. And the reason that this is of concern to all of us, if you will, is that the FBI special units, if you will, as well as Homeland Security, National Defense Agency, and others, have been moving around since the 3rd or 4th of January, people trying to pretend like they don't know that the FBI, Homeland Security, CIA, though the CIA allegedly is not supposed to have any jurisdiction or activities inside of the continental United States or the boundaries of the United States, but for those of us that have followed the intelligence operations of our beloved nation, we clearly know the CIA is everywhere. And a peculiar series of events have taken place. And, you know, one of the pieces, and, you know, maybe this is something upon the return of my colleague, Mr. Allen, next week, opening the phone lines, though the number 763-228-1748 is open and available. We will answer that call, and if you have a particular question, we will repeat it as you stated to us over the air and then answer it, particularly with regards to the Somali problem here in the Twin Cities. But there has been a disturbing feature that has emerged with regards to the strife within the Somali community, and it has to do with the international flavor of activities, particularly in East Africa, and particularly coming on the heels of the carnage that took place a couple of months ago now at the shopping center in Nairobi, Kenya, in which women and babies and children were murdered and massacred, if you will, within that complex, particularly of concern to the Kenyan security forces and intelligence agencies were the brutal murders of little babies, children who were attending a birthday party on the roof of the mall at the time that it happened. The Western media, and particularly media here in the Twin Cities, have been basically ordered to stay away from any narrative reflection or discussion about the volatility. And that was a major battle. It took, almost 3 days to clear the Somali gunman terrorists from that mall, if you will. But one of the things that was troubling, and this is kind of exclusive here from this journalist, if you will, was some intercepts, electronic intercepts, cell phone intercepts that began to take place on the early afternoon of the 1st of January, right after the explosion or bombing, if you will, at the hotel, quote-unquote, and commercial area there on Cedar Avenue in Minneapolis. One of the players that emerged that no one was aware of was Mossad, the Israeli super intelligence era agency, if you will, a entity that has for a long time been involved in what is going on in and around the Horn of Africa, as well as other places in which the Israelis feel that it is a part of the national interest, quote unquote, of the survival of Israel. And it's the doggonedest thing because Mossad has, well, back channels, we'll put it like that, indicate that Mossad began to alert American counterintelligence and their counterparts that they were intercepting discussions and conversations which implied an increase in activity as it pertains to the pipeline. In other words, the recruitment and the sending of young Somalis back across the ocean, and that there was also discussions about the possibility of a direct action, quote-unquote, in this city, if you will. And, of course, it is something that the intelligence agencies have maintained that they want to keep on a low keel, but there were a series of telephone calls, as we said just minutes ago, which were intercepted by Mossad, intercepted by the NSA, intercepted by British intelligence, but it's Mossad who are operating a number of agents in Nairobi, if you will, in parts of Somalia, Mogadishu, and et cetera. And Mossad, who knows how to play the game, you know, they know how to move chessboards around and et cetera, are maintaining that there are operatives here in the Twin Cities that have been more than involved, quote-unquote, in international terrorism and et cetera. And so we have watched closely, as a journalist, the emergence of the special counter-terrorism, counter-intelligence teams of FBI, you know, NSA, National Defense Agency, NDA, and et cetera, moving back and forth in our city. And one of the things that has begun to happen and is now being seen as the source of some very volatile kinds of confrontations within the Somali community, which is drawing in some elements of the American black community, quote-unquote, is that some of this conflict and division amongst the clans, if you will, discussions about folks who still have relatives, if you will, in powerful positions, still in Somalia. We were reminded just 2 days ago of an attempt to attack the presidential palace in Mogadishu, if you will, though that appeared to be handled by Somalian security forces, if you will. Mossad is indicating that there was discussions and coordination between sources there and sources here as it pertains to preparation. It was interesting, the statement made by the Somalian Interior Minister, who maintained that this was nothing but an attempt to gain notoriety, if you will. Apparently at least 9 of the attackers were shot and killed, or certainly captured and executed, if you will. But it still was a bold attack. Again, Mossad, the Israeli super intelligence agency, if you will, is maintaining that some of these actions continue to be planned right here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. One would certainly hope that that is not a fact, if you will, because the potential disruption to everything that the positive Somali community has been working towards would be absolutely first fragmented and then destroyed. But yet, the information about what happened at the two sites of the caucuses, if you will, the one in Stewart, if you will, and the more highly touted one at the Brian Coyle Center, which is right across the street from, quote-unquote, Cedar Riverside, that one has to be concerned. And there is another aspect that is very, very troubling, particularly as we have quietly seen the emergence and the influence of Mossad, the Israeli super intelligence agency, and that was the anger of the Kenyan government about the fact that a United Nations security specialist who happens to also be a member of the Minneapolis Police Department had left Nairobi just a week before the carnage took place at that mall, and those young children and women and mothers were slaughtered, if you will, particularly on the roof of that mall at a birthday party. And what is being talked about is that this Minneapolis police officer, who was assigned, as we said just seconds ago, as a specialist, this person had identified themselves before they were recruited by the United Nations and sent to Nairobi, that they were an expert, that they also were the control for five or six specific Somali operatives, if you will. And the Kenyan government has expressed anger, if you will, over the last couple of months that this particular person who is now back here and is kind of incognito, if you will, incommunicado, if you will, was aware as an outgrowth of at least two individuals that she was handling, and so we've indicated that she was a female, that they had indicated the preparation for an attack on Kenyan ground, if you will, in the sovereign nation of Kenya, in Nairobi, and had chose for what political reasons not to convey that information to the Kenyan security forces in Nairobi, who were certainly made to look bad as an outgrowth of this attack, but then was recalled from Nairobi by the United Nations and reassigned, and is waiting now reassignment to a U.S. federal task force, if you will, but has certainly been working closely over the last month or so in consultation and identifying operatives, quote-unquote, who are involved in the pipeline. Now, this comes at a troubling time also for the Somali community, because after the confrontation at the caucuses, a decision was made to conduct an investigation. Investigation was conducted. Apparently, the results were not what was to be expected, and Chief Janae Harto, who I think has returned to the city today, ordered that the case be handed over to the St. Paul Police Department, which is our sister city across the Mississippi, and they are now investigating the conduct of a number of employees inside of the city council, as well as questions have been raised with regards to the first Somali elected official now serving as a council member from the 6th Ward here in the city of Minneapolis, if you will. We are drawing to an end on tonight's program, if you will. Again, we are extremely concerned about the instability that has gripped, quote-unquote, the immigrant, and in this case the Somali community, our brothers and sisters, who do not totally and fully understand how the American culture of counterintelligence and counterespionage works, if you will, and sometimes fall into the trap, as others have fallen, to believe that, quote-unquote, that they are appreciated, respected, and in some cases anointed. Do not believe that. That is a fatality, quote-unquote, that is absolute, if you will. Watch out for Mossad. The Israelis have a deeper penetration than people believe, know, and understand, and are working closely, Mossad, that is, working closely with American intelligence components. Well, we appreciate the opportunity to join with you tonight, if you will, and we certainly look to return next week. Our colleague will probably be back with us, and certainly the phone lines will be open for any questions that one may have with respect to a particular project that Mossad maintains is called Operation Abraham. Now, for those out there that know about this, quote-unquote, counterinsurgency, if you will, emanating here from the Twin Cities, watch yourself, because Big Brother has his eye on you. Again, Operation Abraham, part of what was discussed back on January 1 in the transmittal conversations after an explosion of a building, killing three here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis along Cedar Avenue just on the edge of downtown. Continue, my brothers and sisters, to be vigilant. Continue to observe. If you do not observe, then you must understand that you are being observed. On behalf, quote-unquote, of our production staff, we bid you adieu.